Welcome to the Today's Leader podcast. Building tomorrow's best leaders, today.
Way to go, guys. Way to go. Keep it going. Good job, guys. All right, Paul. All right, John. Finish off. Coach Carl.
Hey there, it's Coach Cole here and welcome to episode 438 of the Today's Leader podcast, Building Tomorrow's Best Leaders Today. Now, technology is a game changer. It's a game changer for business, organization, and of course for leaders. We need to be technically literate. We need to be relevant when it comes to technology. And the days of leaders placing their head in the sand are well and truly over. In fact, they probably never should have existed because, unfortunately, history of business is potholed with leaders that have done that. Now, when it comes to technology, technology can be a real game changer for exponential growth. And exponential growth comes from shifting mindset and a changed approach. And it's something that today's guest will highlight and share with you. Aaron Baer is an entrepreneur, strategist, and Wall Street Journal and USA Today best-selling author. He is the author of Exponential Theory. Now, he's generated over $4 billion, that's right, $4 billion, in documented results. He's also been entrepreneur in residence at Arizona State University, Thunderbirds, Singularity University at NASA, and he's taught at the Stanford Design School. Aaron was co-executive producer of the award-winning documentary The University, which featured, wait for this, Stephen Hawking, Buzz Aldrin, Peter Diamandis, Ashton Kutcher, and will.i.am. Pretty huge names, both in entertainment and entrepreneurship. He was part of the team that won the X Prize for Mask and is as mentioned before, he's written for Wall Street Journal and USA Today. And of course, he's been on the best-selling list for his books. His mission is simply to create a new generation of leadership, one that is purposeful, conscious, digital, and above all, exponential. And during the course of our interview, I'm sure that he's going to show you many ways in which you can enhance your leadership and grow your business and your capabilities exponentially. So after a word from our sponsor, please welcome Aaron Baer to the Today's Leader podcast.
The podcast is brought to you by Think and Grow Business, the home of the Think and Grow Business Mastermind. If you're serious about growing your business, get serious and join a mastermind group today. Find out more at thinkandgrowbusiness.com.au.
And it's my pleasure to welcome to the Today's Leader podcast, Building Tomorrow's Best Leaders Today. Please welcome the author of Exponential Theory, The Power of Thinking Big. Please welcome Aaron Baer. How are you, Aaron?
Thanks, Coach Carl. Doing good.
Good to hear. Now, this book sounds fascinating. So let's start by sharing a little bit about your story and how you got to be the author of this particular book.
Yeah, so over the last 15 years, I've been doing innovation facilitation for very large companies and then helping entrepreneurship, you know, and I think there's this magic bridge between innovation and entrepreneurship that they can learn from each other. So yeah. I actually got the opportunity to travel around the world to 90 plus countries with companies like Mercedes-Benz, Daimler, Coca-Cola, Belfius Bank, the National Bank of Belgium, yeah. MNC Saatchi. So a lot of different organizations. I would consult on innovation and really how do they get with new exponential technologies. So I was able to go in and out of different places like Tel Aviv and Shanghai and Singapore and really learn where exponential technologies are being implemented by companies. And the whole goal is to teach these very large companies that no matter what they do, they're being outpaced by these small companies that are growing exponential. And so that led to a theory that I call exponential theory. As the world speeds up, is that we are now in demand that people must think bigger and think about the entire ecosystem when they're making a decision. So it's really to create conscious capitalists that are really thinking about all the different sides, all the different stakeholders, not just, you know, shareholders. And that's been a 15-year process where I've been traveling throughout the world to kind of learn that. And I was able to encapsulate it in a book that really proud of. It hit the Wall Street Journal and USA Today bestseller. So very excited about its early response to it. And looking forward to sharing this message candidly for the rest of my life. So it led me into creating the name of my company is called 1 Million Exponential Leaders. So a really massive transformative purpose there, a very exponential, like almost seems out of my reach to do, but I think that's part of me laying down the gauntlet and saying that I'm going to focus on this massive purpose and goal for probably the rest of my life and really enjoy doing that.
Yeah, what a fantastic way to have, create a vision and have purpose. 1 million leaders, I think that's amazing. So business, the history of business is like littered. The highway of business is littered with these wrecks of businesses. You mentioned a lot, some of the big names that you've worked with, traveled the world with. But in the same breath, we've got all these companies that didn't keep up to date, didn't stay relevant. You know, just thinking of a few off the top of my head, we've got the likes of Kodak, we've got the likes of Blockbuster. We, you know, those style of companies. And even in the US nowadays, we've got Kmart that's like three only stores left in the US from a heyday of about 3,000 stores. So what can we learn from the history of business wrecks along the highway? And how can businesses apply that today? You mentioned also, I guess, that they're being outpaced by these smaller companies, and they're agile, they're quicker, they can pivot really, really quickly. So what are some of the learnings from these large ones that didn't learn, I guess? And then how do we get that, how do we generate that entrepreneurial spirit, that agility that we see in the smaller companies?
Yeah, so, you know, you're covering a lot of topics. I actually talk about all those cases in the book as an examples that we can learn from. So Kodak, for example, actually invented the digital camera way back in 1977, I believe, Steve Sassoon. Mm. And of course, at that time, you know, it was pretty crude technology where, you know, it was very pixelated and, you know, for all realistic, we're seeing our, you know, even though we're worlds apart, we're able to see a much better picture digitally now through a streaming service than we ever were back then through still photography. But that exponential technology, just as you look at any technology, started to steamroll and get exponential. Kodak never really invested in that because, candidly, the innovation they had and they had invested in outside of the main core business, yet all their leaders were invested in the core business. So I think the one thing to learn is, and I talk a little bit about Walmart's struggles to get into e-commerce. When all of your leaders are aligned to business revenue that does not want to be disrupted, and then you have all these like innovation tanks, and we really talk about how companies can be successful in that in the book. But that's the key takeaway for big companies, and I'll tie it into what small companies can learn from that. Big companies have to learn that, you know, bringing innovation back into the company without alignment, that part of their new goals would be to disrupt themselves, often bring it back in too fast. Walmart, as an example, attempted to launch an e-commerce site three times, and only the third time did it align when they actually brought it back in where they had an actually goal that, you know, the revenue line wasn't going through someone that actually was in charge of retail operations or whatever. Mm. Before that, these people would obviously sabotage change, and, you know, big companies are made, or, you know, in a way, our bureaucracy is like, hey, to any of the change that's happening in the organization, let's beat that down. And that's why you see, you know, 50,000 plus employees at some of these companies is, you know, to stay the course, to not obviously challenge the status quo. That's the problem where small companies, candidly, when you take a company, an automobile company, and you start teaching them that everything that they've done, that they've been number one in the past, there's some other company out there in the world, somewhere in the world, doing it better than them, because they're solely focused on improving that piece of technology. And once something gets digitized, it becomes exponential. And that's where we see, you know, companies like Uber, who we wouldn't think as a competitor to the automobile industry, actually taking market share away as people start buying cars less, as there's a new option for them. So it's this collision of massive industries just kind of, you know, colliding together. And with the fallout of that is there is no such thing as too big to fail, because other industries are just taking over, you know, certain industries. And no longer can you just worry about your competitor. You've got to literally look at the alternatives to that. Yeah. And small companies to that point can really learn, you know, the fact is focus on something and be the best at it. Find a purpose that's massive and transformative around that idea, and then just continue to grow towards that. And, you know, we highlight companies of Google, Amazon, you know, Tesla. They're all highlighting the company because they all had these grandiose dreams that, honestly, while they were growing on this deceptive phase, no one saw that they were slowly taking over the world, where our five biggest companies are no longer, you know, household brands, oil companies and beverage companies. They're all tech companies, and their market capitalization grew because it's catching up with that exponential curve that all other people are chasing. And that's even, you know, you look at Tesla, which is a product company, the future implications of their market capitalization is really starting to weigh in the fact that if they get to level five autonomy, then they can immediately deploy through software a patch that just automatically makes all these cars, you know, revenue producing machines for their owners. And that changes the whole relationship between automobiles. So we've come full circle from Ford's Model T to where now we have Tesla's, you know, where, you know, why would I go with any other car company if I could buy a Tesla? It's not, it's a superior or equal product, and it's going to produce revenue for me. And potentially I don't even have a car payment by owning a Tesla in the future. So there's a lot to unpack there, but you can kind of see that the world's changing so fast that we need to think a little bit bigger to basically get our head around if our company is going to survive in the future, because no matter who you are and where you are in the world, you're likely being disrupted by someone else somewhere else that you don't even know of yet.
Yeah. And potentially there's that guy in the garage that's starting the process of disrupting. And I find this whole concept fascinating. And I did read once with Facebook, I can't quote the source, but I'm sure that I read that they've actually got a department that's wholly and solely designed around leading their own disruption, so that they're very much aware of what's happening around, and they've actually got this department that actively tries to disrupt their whole company. Now, whether that's true or not, would you know? Would you be aware of that?
I don't know of any one department, but what's interesting about Facebook and Amazon is they're built like networks.
Yeah.
And they have teams that work on projects. And at any one time, like Facebook could have 30,000 experiments of how they're going to grow or how they do revenue. And, you know, they may try out, you know, hey, could we get in the ticketing business? And they test that in Israel.
Yeah.
And we don't even know anywhere else in the world they're doing this. And they soft launch it because they already control 2 billion people access the internet through one of their portals. So Amazon, an example, has 10,000 plus what we call two pizza teams, which are teams small enough to feed two pizzas at a dinner. That's literally how they kind of build their teams, because they realize that bureaucracy doesn't settle in. And what's interesting is those teams, there's many of those teams working on the exact same problems. It's just a matter of how fast they can do it. So all of a sudden, if you have 10,000 experiments going on at one time and you see which ones work and which ones generate the most revenue, and it's always testing and iterating, you see that that type of leadership totally changes from this hierarchical leadership that we've seen in the past. That's this control and command relationship, where when you start and, you know, when you start creating innovation from within, then your whole company is focused on really disrupting itself. And that's what these companies that have grown so exponentially, what we can learn from them is that. And that's the same with Tesla and their machine learning and AI, and how they've really developed out their cars so that, you know, they can continuously learn and grow from every mile. They same with Google and Waymo and the things that they've done with their autonomous cars. So the future is bright for those companies that are able to, and what I call is create the new VUCA, which is have a vision, understanding, clarity, and agility to basically accomplish the goals they need. And that's kind of a leadership model in the book that I really describe, that these companies really wrap their heads around, you know, thinking very big, and honestly may not even have the sight of how they're going to do it, but they just continue working towards that. And I even have this one section on Elon Musk that I, you know, I'm sure you've heard of moonshots at Google. Well, you know, I created this term Mars shots that Elon Musk just said, hey, you know, Google has moonshots. I'm 2040, we're going to put, you know, people on Mars. So that's a Mars shot. So all of a sudden he starts attracting, you know, all the most talented people to SpaceX. And now they've commercialized space by taking astronauts to and from the space station. You know, they're launching satellites. They're doing things that no other private space companies was able to do, but it's because they just thought bigger about what they were doing. And whether or not, you know, I truly, you know, it's like Elon Musk and his ability to launch exponential technologies, because he's done it now 7 or 8 times. Whether or not he gets there or not, he's already beyond succeeded, you know, in an industry that, you know, for the longest time did not believe that the private space company was even possible. And now we see with the reusable rockets and what he's done, you know, just creating a massive transformative purpose. And then, you know, that attracts the talent. The best talent's like, well, I want to work on that. That's more exciting than, you know, working on this little project. And I think that's what Elon Musk has galvanized within Tesla, within even Solar City, that's now part of Tesla, within OpenAI, the Boring Company. I mean, just any industry he sets his mind to, he's really doing some very disruptive work. And part of that is he's winning the talent war and honestly executing at a level that I think every once in a while surprises himself. So it's an interesting example to watch. Where I commit in the book that he's probably going to be the first trillionaire. Which he's well on his way. When I wrote that, he was worth less than 100 billion, but then now he's peaked over 300 billion or whatever it is. But it's crazy exponential.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating and so interesting to observe. So when we look at, you know, the business that's happening today and the businesses that are succeeding, the top five are tech companies, for example. If I'm a leader in a more traditional company, you know, whether it's in banking or in retail or in manufacturing, what are some of the implications that you're seeing with the exponential shift within the business navigate to, sorry, in the business environment? What are some of the things that I need to navigate or start to learn about so that I can remain relevant as a leader?
Well, in the book I cover, there's about 35 exponential technologies coming to market right now. You know, you could say in the past we've always had one or two or three, and that includes the computer, or you know, we could say the smartphone. But the smartphone, you know, since really the mass adoption of that, and that we have a computer in everybody's product pocket, sorry, you know, we're looking at, you know, exponential growth in every area, where the smartphone is literally merging together every technology put in your pocket. Soon it'll eventually jump to a watch or glasses, eventually be a bio implant. There'll be some different interfaces and different things, you know, if you really think sci-fi. But what that does is, if you don't start looking at the different exponential technologies and how they're going to change your industry, whether it's fintech revolution in banking, where cryptocurrency and those kind of things, those, if you overlook them and just look at traditional models, what we can say is anyone that's stagnant and says things aren't going to change, they lose in a very short amount of time. They don't even have a long period of time that they can revel in the fact that they can stay the same. And we've seen this for, and this goes, what's great about these very exponential companies is they realize they have to continue to change their business model. And you're seeing Apple going through a revolution to say, hey, we need to get to a subscription now. And you're going to see in the next few months is they may stop selling products and just get everybody on a subscription, because it's a much better revenue model. And candidly, that's even part of the automobile makers. Why sell a product when I can get a piece of that action or a part of that over the much longer period of time? So, you're seeing a whole shift. Software as a service has shifted a better business model. I talk about Adobe in the book that used to sell a box of Photoshop and it was stolen and, you know, very much had copyright issues and all these different things. They burned the boats and they just said, hey, we're going to go to a subscription back in 2011. Took a little hit on revenue, but since has 10x their revenue and obviously created a suite of services that people want and, you know, have created, you know, protection, digital protection rights and all these different things. So they really embraced digital in a way that they were able to realize the gains of that. I see many other companies, you know, taking that. And that's what I'm helping some very large companies think through. How do you change your entire business model? Because no matter what, you're going to have to do that in the future to survive.
Yeah. And I guess a lot of the traditional, more traditional companies are really focused around that shareholder cycle, that reporting to whether it's Wall Street or reporting to the stock exchange here. And, you know, that really does in many cases almost precludes that long-term vision that we need. If we're going to change a business model and it's going to have that impact on revenue, a lot of leaders and organizations and CEOs and would be really reluctant to do that because of the hit that they're going to take on their share price and their market value. And so that it's almost counterproductive to what they're actually facing in the real world.
Well, I think it's a matter of we, you know, and I'll use Amazon as an example because they had 19 years of lost quarters, right? Yep. And what Jeff Bezos was so great about is saying we're not working to create, you know, and now we can see this as analysts now say, okay, there is a different model out there, is we don't have to earn revenue right away. Amazon weathered that storm. And now we can say, obviously, is the largest e-commerce engine in the world. You know, maybe Alibaba is right there. But, you know, candidly has created that because they weathered that storm. But Bezos was good about retraining, you know, analysts to say, let's not think quarter to quarter. We need to think long term because we're not here to disrupt this over, you know, a year. Yeah. And I think Bill Gates, you know, of Microsoft has really good quote around this is most people underestimate what they can, they overestimate what they can do in 1 year, but they underestimate what they can do in 10 years. And I think that's a key to exponential thinking is, you know, even Elon Musk puts a goal out 2040, that gives them a lot of time to do something, you know, incredibly ambitious.
Yeah.
And it starts to retrain an analyst to say, okay, well, maybe I don't have to look quarter to quarter. And that's where, you know, a consumer product goods or a bank or whatever, if we think short term, we're caught in that. And that's really the trap that'll actually lead to their demise. And I think analysts do need to wake up, but I think it's also CEOs retraining, you know, how do they have conversations about that? Because if you're always worried about the next quarter and that's just your leadership style, then your whole company's never, ever going to have a long-term play. And candidly, that really is the writing on the wall for these leaders. And what I deal with every day in a boardroom or talking to a CEO is just the fact that if you are so focused on pleasing people in the short term, then you will not exist in the long term. So you have to make a choice of what you're going to do now. And if you can retrain those people, and really it comes to building a culture around that. And I think Amazon probably is the best example of that. They just said, hey, we're going to do something incredible in the long term.
Yep.
And it took a very long time for, and they lost a lot of money for a long, long time for investors, but it's reaped the rewards of anybody that ever invested in Amazon at this point. Yeah. So,
and I'd imagine that Uber's very much along the same mold, that they followed that pretty much that financial analyst analytical model. And it took them, I don't even know if they're profitable today, but, you know.
They're still working. I mean, and that's where, you know, it goes to the globalization of these businesses. When you start competing globally and they've been outcompeted in different markets in Asia and different places and actually have extracted, you know, from going there, you know, the world is a big place. And some of these companies are really ambitious to get to every corner on the earth. Without really, you know, spending the money to kind of work on certain markets that they want to be in. So, you know, Uber's probably made some missteps, but what's great about Uber is they're not, they realize they're going to be disrupted and, you know, they're thinking about flying cars and how they can because they realize that Tesla and different things that they're not going to compete. So they're investing in drone technologies and all these different things to think of how do we get to the next generation of innovation, because they have lots of money, right? You know, they have money to kind of do what they're doing, but they're not sitting on that money and relaxing. It's like, let's build a business. And, you know, COVID allowed them a little bit of a reset. The prices of Ubers, I don't know if you've been in one, are not as reasonable as they used to be, which means they're giving fair wages to their drivers. So the whole world in a reset way, you know, the hyper-competitivity that would literally drive almost every business out of business, you know, I think there's, if we're going to go long-term, they have to have more sustainable, I always say, you know, repeatable, predictable, scalable, and sustainable. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you're wanting to build a global business, you've got to build it on value. I mean, WeWork just came out with there's a Netflix documentary, We Crash, really on that whole, you know, how they weren't building a sustainable business. It was just about market, you know, penetration. And in the end, we now, I think, have learned a lesson that it's not that WeWork had a bad business model. It's just that they overexpanded at all costs and lost money doing it everywhere they went. That's probably not the business model for the future venture capitalists. Not to say they won't fall into that trap again and again and again, but not to the lengths that they had, you know, coming out of the last downturn. Yeah. And that, those are all insights that leaders, you know, my book talks literally about almost all these different things to kind of put into position. Is you have to think bigger. You have to think about all these things. The world is complex. It's not simple. And it's just a matter of, you know, incorporating all your different stakeholders, or you will be persecuted, whether the market persecutes you or the public does for not doing the right good. You know, we're in a different place of transparency that some would say has been needed for a long, long time. And those who don't want to change are going to be uncomfortable for a while. And that's, you know, what my job is with leaders, as yours is as a coach, is, you know, to navigate that change, which the only thing that is certain is that change is happening. Yeah. But I even say in the book, you know, we always say is change is the only constant. It's actually not constant anymore. It's accelerating. So it's literally speeding up.
And the world's just multiplying. And even your leader mission that you have with 1 million leaders, it really does sit well within, you know, I'm a Maxwell leadership coach, and John always talks about the law of multiplication. So as we multiply leaders, our influence grows, and, you know, and in the case of businesses, I guess our market share grows and continues to grow. Very interesting when you talked about initially Uber and the sales now of car ownership, or the impact that they've actually had on that. I remember sitting when Uber first came to Australia, and I was in a business breakfast, and they were talking about one of their goals was entirely that, and working with city and town planners on how they can help reduce the amount of cars on the road at peak times and, you know, whatnot. And they were talking about their shared models and, you know, all sorts of things. And I remember sitting there with some leaders, and they all looked at that really cynically, as in, yeah, no, they're just here to make money and disrupt the taxi industry or what have you. And I sort of walked away and I thought, well, that's a higher purpose. Somewhere along the line, they've got that idea. And you could see it starting to transcribe just with some of the simpler things that they were putting in, you know, with shared rides and reducing the amount of cars on the road. And it's really interesting that they've had that impact then on car ownership, because you could probably understand that. So,
yeah, if you just look at urban markets, you know, throughout the world, which now are more than half the population, you know, younger people are choosing not to get a car because they have this alternative method. So all of a sudden, when, you know, I work with Mercedes-Benz, which is a very aspirational brand, you know, they've built products to kind of come down in their price point to meet different consumers. But the reality is kids these days don't have any aspiration of owning Mercedes, because some of them aren't even, you know, in America, you know, some of them aren't even getting their driver's license, which was really the thing of freedom, is that, you know, I get my driver's license and I have all this freedom to go drive and go places. And they're opting out because of, candidly, insurance, the cost of it, all that. And it's just so much easier to share that cost. And, you know, if you take 40 Ubers in a month, you're still less than the insurance and a car payment. And have the convenience of, you know, calling them when you want and candidly getting to where you want and not worrying about parking and all these other things that, you know, gas prices, like that's, you know, that's probably going to be boiled into the overall Uber cost. But candidly, when you break that down, the consumer is not going to have to handle it as much as filling up, you know, at the gas tank where, you know, may cost over $100 to fill up your gas tank these days. Yeah.
And even with cities now, there's a real push towards livability and walkability. So, you know, we've got part of our family lives in Brooklyn and we love going to visit them. And you can understand why people don't own cars because, A, everything's within walking distance. It wasn't designed that way, I guess. It was designed, the streets are there and most of the streets have got cars parked on either side. So. But everything's within walking distance. Your community is within walking distance. So instead of jumping in a car and going shopping or going to the restaurant as we do here in Australia, because it's a different sort of a mode, we just walk there, whether it was 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. So
yeah, I actually led a moderated a panel on Monday with Blue Zones, which Blue Zones is an organization that's now in 69 different cities, and they've gone in and they focus on, you know, people, places, and policy around creating a healthier place. And to your point is we spend about 80-90% of our life within a 10-mile radius of where we live. The walkability, the design of the environment and all that has great implications of whether people walk or not. And candidly, in the U.S., part of our obesity epidemic, you can say directly correlates to the fact that most people in 1975 walked to school. Yeah. And then all of a sudden they're taking buses or they're getting bussed away or their parents are driving them or whatever it is. So you immediately take out the fact that you're going to get in a few thousand steps every day to and from school. So you start to create different bad habits. And what Blue Zones did is they went around the world and found out where these hot spots were, where people lived to 100, and said, how do we take these models and obviously apply them to different communities? So we're doing that here in my community. I have a foundation that we're working with Blue Zones to help that. But it's just what you said. It's like creating the environment and the circumstances where it is more walkable, where it obviously nudges people to eat just slightly healthier. At the end of the day, you know, changing people's habits is tough, but if you don't even have, you know, if you have to walk into a drugstore, but you walk past all the sugar and everything at the checkout, you realize a drugstore may not be for your health, but just to sell products. So you have to look at how things are designed in the environment and what are the slight nudges to get them there. And, you know, Blue Zones as a whole, you know, helps a community really think about health. Yeah. And then all these different nonprofits that are doing things are working under a much larger umbrella. So I'm excited to be involved in that. But it addresses just what you're talking about is livability is an important factor for the future. And I think we are redesigning our cities. And you see New York and Brooklyn, to your example, if you visit Manhattan, you see a lot less traffic because they're literally closing it down for bike lanes. Times Square has been kind of almost gardenized. I mean, those kind of aspects really give a different mindset to the people that live there of, you know, how do I get around and what is a preferred way? And people just walking a little bit more, honestly, adds years and years to their life if they do that every day. So,
excellent. Aaron, I think we could talk about this forever, but I need to sort of bring our discussion to a close to keep our timing. So, as you know, I'm going to ask you some general questions that I tend to ask everyone. So who's been the inspiration for you on your journey?
Well, I've had lots of different mentors. From my dad, he ended up being an entrepreneur when I was about 12, where I was very impressionable. Yeah. And it led me to really seek out to be an entrepreneur and, you know, to create freedom of my time, but, you know, really, really do that. But I'd also say all the way to someone like Elon Musk, who I've studied a great deal about. I wrote about my book and have really studied his different companies. And just the fact that he just takes, you know, candidly, his formula, I think, is fairly simple, is he takes exponential technologies, maybe pairs a couple of them together, creates a massive transformative purpose, puts a goal out there that's so big that it's hard to believe, and then works tirelessly and effortlessly towards it. And it's a recipe for success that if we look at any of these exponential organizations, it's a model to follow. And, you know, candidly, you know, he may have been one of the most criticized leaders, you know, all during this. But now as he comes out, the market capitalization of Tesla is equivalent at one time more than the five competitors that he's up against. So, you know, it's been interesting as I've worked for other car manufacturers that I predicted this, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago. I had a Tesla back in 2013. I kind of predicted that this would happen. And it actually, the only thing I can say about exponential technology is it always surprises you. You know, Bill Gates would be another one. In 1976, he said, I'm going to put a computer in every home. At the time, we didn't even have computers on our desktops at work. And, you know, again, he overachieved because now there's a computer in every pocket, on every, you know, every appliance, you know, just about everything. So you see these exponential ideas that seemed impractical and unreasonable. Is that that's my goal, is to create 1 million exponential leaders, is people, let's not be reasonable. Let's be impractical. Let's actually think big, because even if we don't get there, we're going to succeed beyond our wildest dreams, dreaming about
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Tell me about your relationship with failure.
Yeah, so, you know, in the companies that I'm an advisor and I'm part of, you know, failure is an interesting subject because I think it's part of success as it's part of what happens next. The faster you fail, and that's part of our conversation around, you know, Amazon and Facebook earlier, is they're doing all these experiments with the goal that hopefully, you know, 80% of them fail and they figure out the 20% that work or whatever. And that's the Pareto's 80-20 rule. Yet, you know, I have a belief that you're either winning or learning. And the only time you really fail is if you don't learn anything. And there is insanity if you continue to do the same mistake over and over again, then, you know, you can say you're failing forward. But the reality is nobody knows what is going to happen in the future. We're all think we're fortune tellers. There's a few of us that probably see a little bit more clearly of some of the technologies and things that are coming to market. But it is about winning and learning, and it's about iterating on that as quickly as possible. And that is really the speed of Silicon Valley. When I would take, you know, companies to Silicon Valley, is the secret formula was that they just iterate faster and they're competing on talent, which actually just works faster. And everything in their environment that they create, from where they put sugary snacks on their snack bar, is backed by data and science to say, hey, we don't want our programmers to crash in the afternoon, so let's put these sugary snacks very high and out of reach, or let's put the sodas very low so that they'll actually choose better options. All those little micro, you know, routine or processes create faster, more agile teams to actually execute that much faster. And that's where the talent war, you know, has now exploded. Silicon Valley is not the place that it has to happen. It can happen anywhere in the world. And, you know, we're seeing with even down in Australia with Canva and, you know, just different things where you're just seeing like these massive companies that have, you know, truly transformative purposes, following through those and obviously growing into their exponential future. So
with, you've written your book, Exponential Theory, what book could you say has had the biggest impact on you?
Well, there's a lot. I'm a pretty avid reader. And I have a stack of books always by my side. But I would say the first one that really had the biggest impact on me was Tom Peters' Reimagine. And it was almost like a coffee table book with pictures and different things. But he just thought about the world differently at a time that it wasn't very popular. And, you know, he had chapters like Women Rule and, you know, you read into it and it just is like he made so much sense in a time that wasn't the message. Now we have that message. We understand how important it is to empower those around us. And that's part of exponential theory is, you know, embracing the fact that we've been missing, you know, so many people to have a seat at the table, that we're actually just have killed our own growth in these companies because we've not listened to the people that obviously have the insights into how to grow into those markets. So as you look at a very exponential viewpoint, you see, you know, no longer is my customer base just this one person. It's all these people. And you look at these tech companies, you realize is that they become more conscious from that. And that's part of exponential theory, is that you think about the entire ecosystem and you start learning from all these different angles. And, you know, you gotta listen to the voices that maybe were never listened to before. And that's where the real insight's gonna come in, is the different perspectives. candidly, for too long have we listened to, you know, a very short amount of perspectives to say this is the way the world's going to be and make decisions for other people that don't have a say in it. We can see that that's been democratized. And I think that's part of the power of technology is we are democratizing, you know, these ideas. And, you know, in the end, in a true democratization, we'll see the truth come out. And we're seeing that in a lot of different industries of where value's added or not added. And that's from a stakeholder perspective. But, and we're even seeing that from companies like BlackRock, who have really taken a stance, you know, their $7 trillion asset manager, taking a stance on some of these things, and for good reason. They know that it's going to help their bottom line, but they also know that it's good business and they need to be there to lead that because they know money actually creates change in their industry.
You've mentioned your million leaders. How else would you encapsulate the vision that you have for yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I've written a book, Exponential Theory, which is really the theory of really this exponential idea. I have a coaching, you know, course called Exponential Mindset, Beliefs, and Attitudes, the XMBA, that really goes into, you know, dissecting, you know, how do you approach your mindset? What are the behaviors? What are the attitudes? And part of it is, you know, pulling off, you know, what are the trauma, regrets, limitations of your past that may be holding you back? You know, some people just, you know, what I keep uncovering is people are fearful of success, you know, more than they are of failure. And it's something that, especially in high potential leaders, is like, well, I don't want to put myself out there because I could fail. And I'm like, well, you're almost certain to succeed because you have all these things. You worked so hard your career to get to here. Why would you stop now? And then the other part is eliminating doubts, fears, anxiety, worries, stresses about the future. Because you can only control right now. So when you bring a leader back to be very mindful and in the moment, and you can kind of peel this onion, then you start saying, well, what is your purpose? And then, you know, one of my first exercises in our course that kind of helps me create this 1 million exponential leaders is let's write down everything on your mind, get it all out on paper. And then over the next 6 weeks, let's only schedule the things that align with your purpose. And, you know, block off your calendar and let's see what happens in 6 weeks that you're going to feel better about yourself. You're probably going to have healthier habits. And then I focus people instead on the goals that they want, because the goals they want maybe seem unachievable, is that I focus on the habits. Because if every day we work towards it, that persistence, determination, you know, all these leaders had very long-term visions of what they were going to do. A lot of time goals don't satisfy people in a very short amount of time and they give up. So the overall goal is we're creating a million exponential leaders through these programs where we want to coach them to the mindset, beliefs, and attitudes so that they go create their own exponential future in whatever they want to, you know. And the reality is, you know, I challenge, you know, a lot of times I've been on podcasts and people challenge me with an industry, and anything can be really exponentially reimagined. I think that's part of our process is to enable people to do that for themselves. And if they have the passion to change an industry, they will do that. Not likely in the short term, but in the long term, they most certainly will if they keep
at it. And I guess with that reimagining comes all those traits like persistence and, you know, resilience to keep yourself going. Because as you said, it's certainly not short term. It's going to take that sort of longer term approach to make sure that they are doing what it is that they're setting out to do. So, Aaron, how can people connect with you?
Well, you can find me on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter at Aaron Bear, AaronBare. That's a good first place. You can go to AaronBare.com, ExponentialTheory.com, XMBA.io. There's a lot of different places you can find me online. And of course, it's all about, you know, to me, it's about those that want to be exponential leaders in the future. We're creating an education system. I used to be a business school professor for 10 years. And what I realize is that teaches people to middle management. The XMBA is really helping people think exponentially to get beyond that. And that's where I think in a fairly short amount of time, we can help people expand their mindset, beliefs, and attitudes. And with that, it changes their course, their future. Whether they work in a big company and they're an entrepreneur or innovator or a CEO or a COO, or if they're an entrepreneur just starting a company, we really, you know, match them with peers that are going through the same thing, and we create a buddy and mentor system, and we have a whole system really expand this model, and we have to if we're going to create 1 million Absolutely. Exponential leaders.
So. I'll make sure all those links are in the show notes. So, Aaron, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you today, and thank you for investing in today's leaders.
Yeah, thanks, Coach Carl. Appreciate it.
And now, it's time for Tony's Two Cents.
Now, I once wrote that innovation happens within, but disruption will come from outside the accepted playing field. And the challenge that businesses have when they are disrupted is that it will have a negative and a measurable impact on their performance, notably in revenue and notably in profits. And when businesses are disrupted, it brings around a reactivity. It brings a reactive shift. They've got to adjust reactively. Now, what I've found and what we see from experience is that just simply creating an innovation department or putting someone in charge of innovation within a business often isn't the answer. Now, you heard that from Aaron. Companies may have the intention to create innovation, but unless there is a mindset for disruption, innovation just doesn't happen often. And often what we'll see is that for many businesses, it's just simply more of the same, because the mindset for disruption is actually vastly different to the mindset for innovation. You need bold courage to be disruptive. You need bold courage to be able to really think about disrupting your business model that your company has. And if you truly want your company and business to thrive, creating that internal drive within your leadership teams is something that you simply have to do to maintain relevance. Remember, the disruptive mindset is different from the need to just appoint someone as charge in charge of innovation. And of course, with everything, it's always easier said than done. So how do you get that done within your organization will ultimately be a task for you as a leader. Now, that's just simply my two cents. Now, as always, I'd like to thank Aaron for investing in today's leaders. And of course, his links are in the show notes. If you're looking to build better leadership skills, check out the Today's Leader website at todaysleader.com.au. We really are driving a leadership revolution to build tomorrow's best leaders today. Today's Leader is a collective, the mindset to make a difference, the ability to create an impact. Think and Grow Business hosts our Today's Leader Mastermind, Think and Grow Business, where we focus on personal, professional, and business growth. Book your free 30-minute discovery call right from the homepage at thinkandgrowbusiness.com.au. Don't forget, wherever you are standing stronger, braver, and wiser. Don't forget the golden rule. Don't be an arsehole. I'll see you all again next week. Bye for now.